The Ensemble podcast is intended for professional financial advisors. This content is created in partnership with our sponsor, Zurich Australia Limited, ABN 92000010195, AFSL 232510, and is limited to publicly available information. Before acting on any general advice, you should consider whether appropriate and obtain financial advice from a qualified financial advisor. Ensemble does not hold an AFS license and does not provide any financial advice or services or endorse any general advice. If a PDS or IM exists, you should obtain a copy and review it thoroughly before making a decision.
Welcome to the Life Insurance Podcast for Ensemble. I'm your host, Ben Donald, Managing Director of Life Advice Partners and currently completing a doctorate in life insurance. My goal is simple, improving life insurance outcomes for Australians. This podcast series is all about bringing life insurance back onto the radar for advisors across the country. Each episode features real conversations with the people who live and breathe this work every day, uncovering the lessons, processes, and the stories that help advisors lift confidence, capability, and client outcomes. Whether you write two policies a year or 200, this podcast is here to help you deliver better protection, build stronger businesses, and ultimately serve more Australians. Let's jump in.
Zurich is proud to be supporting this episode. Experience Zurich and OnePath advisor portals with new and improved digital capabilities and an enhanced range of self-service functionality, helping make your business more efficient, saving you time and removing complexity. It's everything you need in one place. Partner with us today.
Hi, everyone. Today I have a lovely gentleman, Paul Milbourn, mate, and I'm really excited to have you here because as far as I'm concerned, you are living proof that a lot of people are wrong about life insurance at the moment. Mate, it's great to have you on board.
Thanks, Ben. It's really fun to be here and equally see you in person again.
Yeah. It's been, what, 2 years?
Maybe something like that since we last caught up
and
had a good chat. And, you know, we've both had some big changes since then.
Yes, indeed, mate. But you're the subject matter here, mate. So I want to dive into this straight away. In the current market, life insurance is viewed as a lot less financially viable than other aspects of financial planning, mate. And as I said earlier, you are living proof that that's not the case because you left a large prestigious firm with, I'm assuming, a relatively healthy salary to start your own life insurance business. That's, wow. Good, mate. Hats off to you. How's it going?
Mate, I'm 20 or so months in now, Ben. I can't complain at all. Business plan 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 have drastically changed over the journey. But here we are 20 months later. The phone rings every day. Opportunity abounds, whatever you might well be looking for. So I can't be happier.
Yeah, brilliant, mate. So just to unpack that and to unpack the enormity of the decision that you made, mate, can you take me back from where you started in the industry?
Yeah, so look, I mean, I started out in the AMP grad program, but not Horizons, in a corporate program when AMP was a wonderful organization and had great L&D. And then went into an accounting firm out in the suburbs. And the best part about that was a really mature accounting firm that had a very immature financial planning function. And my boss, who was a journalist at the time and very much campaigning, for how bad commissions were and the banks were. So I'm going over 20 years ago. He promised that he'd teach me all about how to read balance sheets, how businesses talk to each other, and how to give ethical financial advice, as long as I did all of his paperwork, all of his admin, did all of his asset allocations and effectively write all the advice and do everything else.
Yeah.
And so that really took me on the path of where I am now. A whole other podcast with my next comment, but like every young man, you should listen to your father. I didn't. Before the GFC, I went overseas to be an international advisor, which, as I learnt, was a commission-only dog-eat-dog, unregulated environment. The best thing that did for me, Ben, was it taught me communication skills and just how important they are in the whole entire process. And sort of to get to the start to the end is I built an Australian financial planning business that was 99% life insurance and 1% wealth management because we were waiting for the SMA to come out next month for 2.5 years. When it was time to come home, I had no connections in Australia. Mm. I'd professionally grown up overseas. And so I transferred my very, very, very small, mainly life insurance business into a large mid-tier accounting and spent the next 8 years there.
Yeah, wow. All right. So that's a lot more storied, mate. And thank you for sharing that because I didn't know a lot about
Okay, a lot of
thought you did, sorry.
That's great. Mate, so then you've gone 8 years and we've got to the stage. So 8 years is when, what, 2 years ago?
2 years ago, yeah.
24-ish.
Yep.
We're well into life insurance framework. We're well into, you know, getting beaten up as an industry, basically. Why the change, mate? So really healthy salary, I'm guessing, comfortable job, you know, cruising through life. Why?
There's probably two parts to it, Ben. There was in 2016 when I'll be clear, it was a tiny business. I always thought I'd be self-employed again. That was always the plan. Do 5 years in corporate, see what happens, and become self-employed. A thing called COVID changed that substantially.
Yeah.
But having said that, you know, my time there, you know, I think I'd achieved what I was going to achieve where I was, and it was time to move forward. But the biggest thing there around the reform and ultimately how to make a buck in this business and what I'd learned is that we looked at how you make revenue in life insurance the wrong way around. Hmm. And I want to be clear, you don't want to lose money. So if we're clear on that, we don't want to lose money.
Right.
However, upfront revenue just needs to pay your bills. You send the trail or the renewal commission, that goes back to the shareholders.
Right.
Or that pays for your holiday, whichever way you want to look at it.
Yeah.
And so my view has always been that if I could have a business where my upfront income pays the costs, then the renewal income will be the profit that, yeah, that we return back to the shareholders. And that's what I've run my business on the last 20 or so months, is that the new business needs to cover the costs. And again, we're a very new business-focused firm at the moment. We've done a couple of acquisitions, but it means we don't have a big back book to serve because that brings other dynamics into your business.
Yep.
But, you know, with that, the reality being there is not that much to do for a brand new client for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. So you can really build that renewal income up at the end of the day.
Hmm.
And 20% renewal is pretty attractive.
Yeah.
So yes, once upon a time, people used to drive lovely cars on 110, 20, 30% and marketing overrides and overseas holidays.
Yep.
I get that. But their renewals were, you know, pittance.
Mm.
They had to go out and in reality find new clients every day. We can build sustainable businesses,
yeah,
on the back of 20% renewals.
And what about the 60%, mate? You said covering bills and whatnot. So
yep,
covering the bills, it's,
yep,
all, but
yep.
Yeah, it's working. So 20 months in.
Yep. So, I mean, we have other things going on in our business, but in terms of the core function of the business, our upfront revenue pays salaries, wages, licensing costs, and the like. The renewal income I deploy elsewhere to help grow the business, so effectively reinvest it.
Mate, that's like, I'm in awe of that. Really, congratulations, mate. That's absolutely brilliant. So a couple of transactions, but mainly starting from scratch.
Yeah. I was having a look preparing for this, Ben, and we've acquired 100 clients, if I keep it to client numbers, and we've managed 410 right now.
Yeah, wow. So you've put on 310 clients in 20 months. Yeah,
that's not all new business. A lot of, you know,
appointment.
Yeah, letters of appointment, letters of appointment.
Yeah.
But we only work in an ideal client sphere as well. It's an ideal client sphere for us, just to be clear.
Yeah.
So often we pick up really good business owners, executives, older lives in particular.
Yeah.
That we need to do a restructure of what they've got, but we don't want to rewrite them, or we can't rewrite them, whatever it might well be.
Hmm.
And so the revenue or the client numbers, you know, quickly accumulates.
Yeah.
Ensemble Progress is for advisors who want real momentum, not just inspiration. Find out more at ensemble.com/membership.
And again, I'm blown away. So, mate, so our industry has got the image where you can't do life insurance anymore, right? Everybody's saying, oh, refer it to a specialist. But you're telling me now, starting from scratch, you kicked off, you're covering your bills, and you've added 310 clients in 20 months.
Yeah.
That is phenomenal, mate. Congratulations. That's brilliant. Where are they coming from?
I say all over the place, but it's a well manicured all over the place, I think, is the best way of putting it. So we acquired a small portfolio off a private wealth firm, and who deals in our ideal client, and they give us, or they send us, usually 1 to 2 referrals a week. I work with around 4 or 5 accounting firms, and again, the right kind of accounting firms for us. And while it's never consistent, they certainly, you know, between them probably send us another 4 or 5 referrals a month.
Yeah.
And then outside of that, it's, you know, a bit of people off LinkedIn, people in the industry saying wonderfully nice things about me and just being active.
Yeah.
It's amazing how your phone rings when you're out and about pounding the pavement.
Like, yeah, belly to belly, right? That is the key for this sort of thing, right? I'll unpack a couple of things there, mate. First one is LinkedIn. You are extremely active on LinkedIn, mate, and it's really lovely. I imagine quite a few people who are connected with you as well see this, but it's the Saturday reflections where you talk about, you know, 2 or 3 clients that you've helped that week. You've got the little emoji of the coffee cup and the sunset and whatnot, mate. What's the theory behind that? Is that keeping active or?
Yeah. So when COVID, I'd always been somewhat active on LinkedIn, but not understanding it. And COVID in Melbourne was horrible, but it also gave a lot of free time. And so from that, I started reaching out to some other people in professional services who were doing what I perceived to be a good job, got some tips from them.
Yep.
And one of the big things was just consistency and showing up, whatever that meant.
Yeah.
Everything I say, Ben, I've stolen off someone else. There's nothing original.
Yeah.
And so the Saturday catch up was based on an accountant who does a Friday, summary. He clearly loves food. So it's always about where he's had lunch that week.
Yeah.
And it goes from there. And I just did my own version of that.
But it's working because I read it all basically every week, mate. So it's awesome.
Thanks.
The stories themselves, they're centered around business owners, accountants. Is that the sort of client that you work with?
Yeah. So I really want to make sure. So when people are going to ask about where does your business come from, LinkedIn is a key reason why I stay front of mind.
Yeah.
So I've met someone somewhere in the journey. The reality is they're seeing me when they log on to LinkedIn. They're seeing me talk about the people I work with and how I solve their problems and what those problems look like. And when that client comes into that accountant's office and says, oh, my God, Ben, this is my problem. Do you know someone? They think about me.
Yeah. Saturday Reflections, Paul Milbourne.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice, mate. Yeah. That's brilliant. And have you been able to stay true to that ideal client? So I imagine, and this is for sort of anybody that's thinking about starting a business, revenue is pretty important. So I imagine that the temptation is there to basically take anyone and everyone.
Yeah, great question, Bear.
Have you? Or what does it look like, mate? Yep. 310 clients is a big number in 20 months.
We didn't have to stray that far at the end of the day, but we definitely strayed. So I'm not going to hide about that.
Yeah.
I've always spoken about what do my ideal clients look like. And I've been really clear on that for a long time. So A's, B's and C's, but in terms of the C's, we definitely found more of those. And for us, C's are just a future A or B, just to be clear. They're usually younger.
That's a lovely way to put it.
And again, not to be, on a totem pole, but I've always worked in professional services. So usually my clients are suit and tie wearers, if I keep it as easy as that.
Yep.
And we did start to get a few blue collar workers, and I found that very difficult because I genuinely never underwritten a plumber, an electrician, a truck driver. And we did the work, that's your point, kids to feed, animals to feed, bills to pay.
Yeah. There's 5 cats in the background, but yeah.
Only four. But
yeah.
But there's also big learnings out of that, which was stay on message.
Yep.
And really double down on who your ideal client is.
Yeah.
And that sort of has meant we've just attracted that more and more.
Sure. Has it dropped off in the 20 months? So I'm going to guess, again, without putting words in your mouth, so month 1, 2, 3, you got a heartbeat, bang, we're going to get you insurance. Has it dropped off?
Yeah.
The focus on...
And to that point as well, though, we were happy to work with anyone because we needed to get systems process working. I am not a systems and a process. I understand the importance of systems and processes, but I'm not the systems and processes person. And as a one-man show, you know, in April 2024, I know what X-Plan was, but I'd never physically used it myself. Probably with a spelling error, you know, those became really important. So I just saw it as a great opportunity to learn, and to get, you know, robust systems and processes into the business. So we could build some foundations for growth.
Well done, mate. You're still here. I was going to say, you know, make a joke about the two of us losing our hair with stresses around that, but a bit too late for that. So systems process, mate, you mentioned X-Plan. What are you using at the moment? What did the journey look like around getting that process up and running so that you could talk to the plumber as well as the accountant?
Yeah. So one of the great things I learned in my previous role was, you know, if you don't have a system and a process and it's not followed, you write checks. at the end of the day.
Yep.
And one of the reasons I joined Bombora, there were two main reasons. One, we wanted to work with people we know, like, and trust. Tick.
Yep.
And the other one is they had built workflow processes in Xplan for a risk-only practice. Mm. And so whether I could use Xplan or not wasn't the problem. It was the fact that as long as I followed a bouncing ball,
yep,
I wasn't going to write checks.
Right. Okay. Brilliant. And that's up and running from day one?
That was up and running from day one.
Oh, shout out to Bombora for building a system within a system. Well done, guys.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah. More recently, I've taken the view that you can't scale advice in Xplan, rightly or wrongly. Mm-hmm. I know other people will feel otherwise. And I also took the view really early on, Ben, that it's going to be far easier to build a business of the future starting with no clients,
yep,
than it's going to be to transition something that has 10,000 clients, 20 staff, et cetera, et cetera.
Could not agree more.
Yep. So we've really chipped away,
yep,
at, I'll call it, that automation process and digital,
yep,
with a constant view to what does this look like in, you know, 2025, 2026, 2027.
You said the word automation, mate. Are we allowed to say AI? Where does that sit on it?
I don't reckon it's AI.
No, okay.
A bit of AI sits, yep, in there, but I think people go and look at the nice shiny thing with that new little two-letter word and go, your process engineering's been around since Jesus roamed the earth.
Yep.
And that's all it is. It's just,
yep,
process engineering.
Yeah, okay. All right. And you mentioned earlier, mate, so you've got the upfront fact finder, right? And sorry, you mentioned earlier at lunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you've got a short little fact find that you send to people, then you follow up a conversation. So just take me through, because you mentioned before none of these are your ideas, so I'm happy to steal.
Yes, no, you steal them all.
Mate, tell me, I'm an accountant. I knock on the door. Paul, I need some insurance. What does it look like from there?
Yep. I'll take one step back, Ben.
Yeah.
This is not just accountants, it's anyone.
Yeah.
They want to be kept in the loop as to what's going on with their client. Accountants in particular, they love their client more than anyone in the world. Mm. And they keep them so close to their heart. Remember, people like you and me, especially if they're older, we've come and gone.
Yeah.
And they're still here with their client. So what's really important that I learned is to keep them and love them the whole way through the journey.
Yeah.
And so I coined a phrase that, you know, we'll give them the Mercedes-Benz experience. If we look after the referrer, we are going to look after the client.
Yeah.
We're going to communicate with the client. We're going to get back to them timely.
Sure.
And most importantly, so my rule is, Ben, if you introduce me to someone, the first thing I do is I'll call you. I'll say thank you. I'll probably get your voice message. I'll then contact the client. I'll probably get their voice message. I send the email straight back.
Yep.
You're already feeling good about things.
Yeah.
I had one this morning. I'd already written the email to the accountant on the aeroplane this morning to press send straight after the meeting.
Yeah, beautiful.
What's really important about that is they intuitively think you're a really good advisor.
Mm.
At some point, you are not going to get someone on risk for whatever reason it might well be. Equally, at some point, you will drop the ball. You'll forget to call someone. You won't. It just happens.
Yep.
But rather than being a bad advisor, it's going to be, oh, they just made a mistake and the referral will keep on coming.
Yeah, it's the exception to the rule.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. But then, I'm turned from the accountant. I'm now the client, not the plumber, but I'm the C-suite individual or whatever it is. I've been referred by my accountant. What does the process look like for me as a client?
So what we do is we tell the client in the most polite possible way that for us to have a really good conversation that's focused on them and what they're looking to achieve and how we can work with them, we need them to spend around 2 to 5 minutes to give us some data up front.
Yep.
And we're not after a full fact find.
Yeah.
We want them to spend 2 to 5 minutes because it's far easier them giving us names, date of birth, address, photos or photocopies of the super statements, the insurance statements.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I work on an 80% rule. I'll get 80% of the information, 80% of the time. Then also, man, have a great conversation. So my meeting this morning, I got to talk about, the young lady had left the Big Four to go to a big consultancy business, So tell me about that. You know, I see you're on the partnership pathway.
Yep.
She automatically thinks I know everything about where she's going because I know she's on the partnership pathway.
Yeah.
I know she's on the partnership pathway by what she's told me, by reading between the lines.
Yeah.
So we just start to get this great relationship, great rapport up front.
Yeah.
And I'm not wasting 20 minutes on the facts.
Yeah. Mate, we can't not mention underwriting. Tell me, what are you doing? So, again, I know you're about to drink. Sorry.
You're right.
So, pre-assessments, in the experience that I have talking to advisors, that's been a big focus of theirs. You mentioned before about 2 to 5 minutes worth of questions and the basic client data. Where and when and how does the health conversation come into it with a client?
Yeah, so probably A quick shout out to Mark Fabris on the work he's done for us recently in that data gathering process. So if we start from as of this morning's meeting and that short fact find, it gives them an ability to tell a bit of their health story. And it's completely up to them. But again, it's not a 20-page questionnaire.
Yeah.
It's just tell us a bit about your story. I've been around long enough, Ben, that I've become a pretty good field underwriter. Mm-hmm. And I bring that into the conversation. And I also know what's important and what's not most of the time.
Yep.
So I don't necessarily find it a problem personally.
Mm.
But I understand if this is, but you know, I have these conversations daily and over 20 years now.
Yep.
So I'd understand if you're a holistic advisor or you're just starting out how much of a bane of existence this can be.
Yeah.
But I really feel we push too much, I'll call it fact, onto the client rather than having a conversation with them and drawing out, you know, what's really going on, why it's going on.
Yeah.
There are always a surprise. I always think of the guy that said to me one day, my cardiologist didn't tell me that. To which I replied, you see a cardiologist given everything we've just been through. neglected to tell me all of that.
Yeah.
But they're the exceptions, not the rules.
Yeah.
It is extremely rare we would have a case that we put up to an underwriter that has, it might have a small hiccup, but certainly doesn't go through.
Yeah. Okay. So you're, pre-assessment's done based on the 20 years worth of experience effectively.
If I sort of go a bit deeper on that, understanding the obvious stuff.
Yep.
The one thing I think we do really well is understand what the big rocks are, getting medical files up front.
Yep.
So we get releases. I work with SG Health a lot now and get them to go and get the medical files. File up front.
Yep.
The client understands, they sign it off. Some of the insurance companies don't like getting an 800-page PMAR without an application. I understand that. They equally don't want to play the game. They don't get the business. That's fine.
Yep.
But it allows us to really understand and work through, well, can we insure this person or not? What are we dealing with? That's not in every case.
No, no.
But certainly when, you know, things uncover or when you're working on larger cases where PMARs are required, I'd rather know what's in that medical file before I do an application and deal with it then.
No, mate, 100%.
Then get my surprise.
Yeah. Mate, you've talked about fewer clients, deeper conversations, and that's sort of resonating in some of the conversation that we've had so far. Can you explain that a little bit more to me?
Yeah. So you got to sort of, you know, you can either work in a sausage factory, I guess, and just sit there on the conveyor belt one after another after another. And that's in any form of advice, accounting, financial planning, legal, it doesn't matter. Anything in professional services, punch in, punch out, follow the conveyor belt. Mm. I sort of had a Jerry Maguire moment, for want of a better word, not the show me the money part, but when he writes his little manifesto.
Yeah.
I
was just thinking about the fish. Sorry, mate. That's it.
And, you know, it's, who do I enjoy working with? Why do I enjoy working with them? The energy they give, the energy I get from them. I know that's a bit woo-woo. It's not meant that way. But, you know, you have a choice of who you work with at the end of the day. And I want to work with the people I enjoy I work with.
Yeah.
And then I can add the most value to. There's only so much we can talk about when it comes to life insurance at the end of the day. But we
Are
get
you
to-
kidding, mate? This is the most exciting topic there is.
Well, you're getting to the next part there, but there's everything else you learn about these people.
Yeah.
So, you know, if I keep this really, really simple, you know, Ben, you've got a wife and some young kids. If you've seen me, they're going to be financially secure if you unfortunately pass away.
Yeah.
But what's the point of your wife getting millions of dollars to look after her and the kids and pay the mortgage off? And I put it like an oil spill, right? So we've drilled for oil. We've now found it. The life policy's paid out. But without a proper estate plan, you know, this is just oil going everywhere at the end of the day. Just simple things like that. A better conversation in that example, get you off to the lawyer, get you a decent estate plan with testamentary trusts properly planned out that mean your wife is going to be the owner of the income, not the revenue. You get where I'm going with this. So just deeper conversations that are adding real value. And I think that makes you really referable as well.
Yeah. So if – here you go, spot challenge, mate. If you had to guess off the top of your head the percentage of clients of yours that have a – beneficiary nomination on the policy, what do you reckon that would sit at?
Most of them would have their estate nominated.
Perfect. So I've looked at portfolios, and I'm sure you have as well, where that sort of sits less than 10%, and it seems like something really easy to fix that just strengthens a client relationship.
I'd imagine 70 or so percent, but I haven't got the data on it.
Yeah. You made 70%? No, that's good. All right, we'll check in a week again just to make sure that that's accurate or something, mate, and we'll get it to 100. And for anybody else that's thinking about ways to add value, that's a good quick win, right? Get that beneficiary nomination up. Mate, so in terms of estate planning lawyers, is that part of the circle of referral partners that you've got, or is it somebody that you're sending it one way? What does that look like?
I pretty much work with a couple of estate planning lawyers.
Yep.
And it's work one way most of the time. Lawyers are really bad referrers, Ben. If you know anyone that's getting lots of referrals off lawyers, I'd love to meet them and understand how they've cracked that chestnut.
Yeah.
But for me, it's always been around, I don't want to work with someone that's an order taker. I want them, and lawyers traditionally take instructions, don't give advice. I understand that. Mm. So I work with a lovely gentleman who only does wills now. And I think he's 79 years old.
Yeah.
And he's just got the best tableside manner, Ben.
What's his name? Just
make sure. Tony Kelly.
Yeah. Tony, if you're listening, Paul's a big fan.
Yeah. I think I'm pretty sure he knows it.
Yeah.
But, you know, he looks after me as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, just gives sensible advice to clients.
Yeah.
Factual, tells them the truth.
Yeah.
And pulls them into line.
Yeah. Okay. So you've got the cohort of professionals around you that help you with your client relationships.
Yeah.
Mate, okay, so 20 months in, and again, I can't get past this 310 clients, mate, in 20 months. It's brilliant. What are the mistakes that you've made? What are the lessons that you think that you've learned that you'd be happy to impart on me and anybody else listening?
We spoke about the big one earlier, just how bad we are at admin. So that was a
kryptonite.
So I thought that, you know, doing my own admin would be easy because it's easy, right?
Yeah.
So as a sidestep, I'd always said that the administrators are the most important people in our businesses because it's data in, data out. And if I get bad data in, I give bad advice. I give bad advice. I can't feed my kids.
Yeah.
So they're actually the most important people in our businesses. But yes, I got to learn that, you know, I hadn't actually done, you know, my own dirty work for about 15 years at the end of the day. I'd largely missed that, you know, I'll call it digital revolution of CRMs, like an X plan, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and had, you know, successfully avoided having to use myself rather than the support staff using those relevant tools. And so it was just going back to ground zero and, you know, quite simply, how does Xplan work as an example?
Yeah.
How do you use X tools?
Yeah.
How do you actually get the simple things like research? I've read research a billion times.
Yeah.
But I've never had to do it myself.
Yeah, right. Is that where like hooking up with a group like Bombora sort of allowed you to accelerate those learnings?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just you're leaning on people that have been there, done that, or had staff to do it.
Yeah.
But it was certainly admin was the big one. Just how slow turnaround times are.
Mm.
And that's not trying to poo-poo our insurance companies. Because I understand.
I believe the phrase is, your call is important to us. We'll be with you in a moment.
Yeah.
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 Well, look, I mean, there's one that's just sold recently where profit's up 60%. So fantastic for shareholders.
Yeah. Reading between the lines there.
Yeah.
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 Mate, are there any groups that sort of that helped you out? So you started out on your own, right? You've hooked up with Morboros, a good systems process and the rest of it. You've got, I'm assuming, a couple of good referral partners. You spend a bit of time with them. What about community?
Yeah.
Are there any groups that you hang out with where you get referrals or other peers? Mm.
So I'm part of a business peer-to-peer advisory group called Coragio.
Yeah.
But the important thing that it's not a networking group. It is a peer to, it's for business owners.
Yeah.
As a business owner, I get substantial out of it.
Yeah.
Then the other part is I get to be in a room full of my ideal clients and get to talk to what my problems are and get feedback from them.
Yeah.
There's 900 or so members in that. So that's one area.
Yeah.
And where there's, you know, an indirect benefit, so to speak. Mm-hmm. I'm not in any professional networking groups or anything like that. A lot of it is repetition of time at the end of the day, Ben, just like you've been around long enough now. I've got a bit of a brand name. So long as I pound the pavement, the phone shall ring.
Yep.
And I'm a really big believer in pressing the flesh and getting out and about and making it happen. So
who would have thought hard work pays off?
Exactly right. So I look at the people. Now, there are some guys with some really good businesses via your digital means, and I get the 1%, mm-hmm. and they've got great businesses that way. But the other 99% who aren't are sitting there worried about where their next meal's coming from, it is just as easy right now as get out of your house and go and talk to people. There's, you know, in reality, less than 10,000 financial planners, 150 riskies. Australians are screaming out for what we do on the life insurance front. The banks don't exist anymore. The big instos are consolidating. There are, you know, hundreds of thousands of unadvised clients.
Yeah.
And they want a relationship with someone.
I guess, mate, that sort of goes back to why you kind of went out on your own 20 years ago or thereabouts.
Yeah.
Mate, on, again, circling sort of back to the LinkedIn and then also talking about the groups, mate, can't help but notice that you're a part of MDRT as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me about MDRT and what you get out of that group.
I think the best way I can describe it, Ben, is MDRT has an amazing way of giving you exactly what you're looking for when you need it.
Yep.
Whatever that might well be. That can be from a client services person looking for an advisor one day to a 50 years experienced advisor that just, you know, is looking for the next aha moment.
Yeah.
So what I get out of it, I guess, when I came back to Australia in 2016, I was employed to take over from one of the veterans of our industry who'd, you know, built it in the 70s and 80s at the very pointy end of town. And he sort of told me from day one is you need to get to America. And surround yourself with the absolute biggest and the best.
Yeah.
And I didn't get it. And I had several sliding doors moments in 2022. And I was at the ICC in Sydney and the banners were everywhere. And I thought, stuff it. I'll just go to the global conference.
Yeah.
And you talk about giving you the right message at the right time. There was a Welsh guy who did a 4-minute talk and it was 2 minutes, 21 seconds in. He spoke exactly to me, to my heart and where I was at that moment.
Yeah.
And I, what he said was, you know, and what you will do when you're at this stage is you will actively review the top 20% of your clients every 3 months. And this is what you will say. I went back and did that. It added, you know, about half a mil of whip to my pipeline in 4 weeks. Yes. Didn't execute. It's a different story.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was him saying that.
Yeah.
I walked out of the ICC saying, I'm going to resign. I'm going to go out by myself because it actually isn't that hard.
Yeah.
And then to that point, it's a network of people. Our job is a really lonely job.
Mm.
Really lonely. And it's really easy to get caught in all the negativity of whatever the hell's going on. But MDRT is ultimately based on, you know, someone has made me be a better person and my job is to help you be a better person. And what better place to be is to be surrounded by people who just want you to be better.
Yeah.
Whatever that means.
Yeah.
Not just in advice.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at it from an international lens, right? Because the Australian, culture, sort of the tall poppy syndrome, where somebody's successful, you know, we might roll our eyes at them.
Yeah.
Whereas in places like America, it seems to be a lot more celebrated.
Exactly.
You're really good at this. How can I become really good at this? And then they're sharing those ideas.
I was thinking about the annual meeting in Miami last year. So unfortunately, because Mr. Trump wouldn't let a lot of people in, there was only about 7,000 people rather than 20,000.
Yeah.
But a really good advisor from Melbourne goes, we don't have anything like this in Australia.
Yeah.
It is completely different. And then, you know, to that point, we're all at different phases. I go back to a couple of years ago, I had a coffee with a risk-only advisor out of the Middle East that could change, you know, what he imparted on me was amazing. Mm. This time I met an American guy who moved to Lebanon with his wife when he was 24 and the only job he could do was be a life insurance salesman.
Yeah.
Doesn't speak the language, by the way, et cetera, et cetera. And now kind of AIA Global, his largest insurance writers. And yeah, this is when the war in the Middle East was just kicking off at this point. And I was like, how do you deal with this? And he's like, well, you know, been at war for 25 years over here. You know, it'll keep on going on. It'll be all right. Imagine that mindset here of an insurance company won't issue a policy today for us. And these guys are having their income held up because of other bits and pieces. And I could rabbit on and on forever, Ben, but
yeah.
It's an organization that will, you know, whatever you put in, you'll get 20 times more.
It's not a bad reflection. You know, it's sitting here in Australia, it's really hard. Mm. And be like, well, you've just spoken to a life insurance advisor who's basically been exposed to war for the last 25 years,
yeah.
Mate. So that's a good way to put it in perspective.
Yeah. And one of the largest writers of life insurance in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Mate, so again, I want to reiterate this, mate. I've said it ad nauseum, this conversation, 20 months, 310 clients. I'm in awe. Where are you? And again, if we're crossing lines, please let me know. Where are you financially compared to where you were on a salary? So I imagine it was quite a scary leap, right? You would have had to have saved up 6-12 months income, whatever it might have been. Where do you sit now compared to where you sit?
Yep.
then, sorry. Yeah. And what's the trajectory look like over the next 4 or 5 years?
Yeah. So like everyone else that's my age, Ben, and your age, I've got bills to pay and lots of them.
Yeah.
So we couldn't necessarily afford a pay cut, I think's the best way of however you engineer it, how you put it.
Yep.
So I've paid myself the same salary.
Yep.
From day one. In terms of the where to from here, I've also reinvested heavily in the things like automation to allow us to scale and grow. Mm-hmm. I've been really selective on what staff I have, why, and what they do, and being aware of what I'm not good at.
Yeah.
And having people to fulfill those roles.
Yeah.
We sort of see next year as being where the dam all tips the other way, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. and that there's profit to come out of that business yep. to actually go, I'm a business owner and get paid for being a business owner.
Yeah, lovely.
But I didn't take a pay cut, if that answers the question.
Okay.
But equally, if the business doesn't make enough money,
you then eventually, yeah.
I have to take a pay cut.
Yeah.
But we're heavily invested in building, I hate these corporate-y words, but building the platform, for want of a better word, to allow us to grow, to take on more advisors,
yep.
To have those advisors have wonderful, deep emotional conversations with clients.
Yep.
You know, there's a great saying, Ben, I'm going to get this wrong, but, you know, there's no logic in emotion. And in what we do, the dollars are in the emotion at the end of the day and sort of, what I mean by that, just being really simple, is it's a factual conversation to say, Ben, you've got 6 weeks of sick leave, therefore you need a 60-day income protection plan. That's all fact. 70 your income. It's a very different outcome, Ben, than if I ask you that if your income stopped today, how long would you be comfortable without an income coming into your family? Because then you're going to tell me what the pain point is.
Yeah.
And it's a very different hook that you have to that income protection policy at its really simple level.
Yeah.
So we want to have advisors that can have really emotionally led conversations because the facts will always be the facts.
Yeah.
We don't want to have poorly trained clients that are just, you know, getting rebroked every 2 years at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And I fear that we're building businesses now that are effectively that. Everything's fact. You know, you need exactly this amount of cover, for example.
Yeah.
And with, you know, the way the life officers are moving premiums around and discounting up front, we're teaching good clients to be bad clients and potentially great advisors to only just be order takers.
Yeah. Mate, it's, yeah, really, really strong observation, you know, that the structure of the policies and the products at the moment, it's the wrong word to use, but it encourages churn.
Yeah,
like it's, you know, it's, yeah, it's a sad reflection of where we are as an industry. Yeah. Mate, so again, well done for going out on your own. Mate, so what are you looking for? So if you tip over the hill in 12 months or whatever it may be and you look to expand, what does that look like? So you want to bring on advisors, you want to bring on support staff, are you looking to buy more books? What does growth look like for Milbourne Insurance Solutions?
Column A, B, C, D, and E.
Yeah.
With a bit of a difference.
Yeah.
So I guess to that point, you know, I had my first advisor join me a couple of months ago. I guess the strong suit for us as a business is our referral network mm-hmm. and our referral network that's growing and the kind of clients they refer to us.
Yep.
At the end of the day, I'm one person with only 24 hours in a day.
Yep.
So, you know, we want to keep on growing out that referral network and bring in great advisors, who don't want to do admin.
Yep.
Who just want to sit in front of really good clients and give them good, strong, robust advice that will protect them and their family.
Yeah.
So we're looking to build our referral networks, first of all, with the kind of firms that deal with, you know, business owners that have complex problems, private clients, C-suite executives. We're not for everyone.
Yeah.
And that's fine. The acquisition front, similar, Ben. You know, we're not built like some of our former employers where we can just simply swallow anything and everything and put them into the factory.
Yep.
So we are actively acquiring. We've done a couple. We'll hopefully do a couple more over the next 6 or so months. But again, they would be coming out of those private client style of businesses.
Yep.
Rather than, you know, the volume side of things.
Yeah.
I'd love to have two advisors join in the second half of the year and to keep on growing out with partnerships and to keep on doing good work with people that you want to go to work with. You know,
yeah.
You don't want to be looking at your phone going, oh God, it's him calling again. And I tell my staff the same thing. We don't have any bad clients, guys. All of our clients are people that I really enjoy working with.
Yeah.
And I don't dread my phone being called.
And
that's why I love the introduction model, right? If I like working with you, Ben, and you like working with me, you're going to attract good clients.
Yeah.
Which means you're going to introduce me to good clients.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. Mate, just out of nowhere, sorry, just wanted to ask the question. Claims? What has had any yet? Or
this could be a whole other podcast, Ben.
We'll keep it to 30 seconds or less.
Yeah, look, so we're a brand new business, so claims weren't really going to be a problem for us. My partner, Terry, as I said, so Terry turned 80 the other week and has not been advising for a couple of years.
Just quickly, happy birthday, Terry.
Yes, yeah. And but our phone was ringing with you know, from our network with claims. And so we've actually started a claimed advocacy business. Okay. We're not out there actively growing it and procuring it, but it's just such an important area.
Yeah.
And it was obvious for our referral partners that this was going to be important for them as well. And I think, to say this politely as possible, at the worst possible moment for our clients, they get to have an someone that's been doing the job for over 50 years, who's been there and seen it that many times. It's not funny, who knows how it works. And it's like having your grandfather there with you at that exact moment. So that's been working really well for us.
Yeah, brilliant. I mean, so all in all, really comfortable with the decision that you've made, really happy on the journey. Nothing too much you'd change other than learning how to use admin systems and processes again, mate. But that's absolutely brilliant, mate. Thank you so much for all this. Is there anything else you'd like to share towards the end?
Not necessarily, other than if you're an advisor out there and looking to grow, I would definitely get along to the Million Dollar Roundtable Global Conference in August this year.
Yeah.
It is like nothing you've ever been to in Australia. If it's for you, it's for you, and it will genuinely change the trajectory of your career.
Yeah. And what about, and just quickly, for those young guys that are listening, mate, mentorship sounds like it features relatively strongly in your life, right? You talked about Terry and a couple of other people.
That was the other thing I was going to talk about is the best thing any advisors can do is actively seek out mentors, coaches, whatever it might well be. I have the aha moments accidentally, but I look at the best advisors in the world. They all have coaches in their life, mentors in their life, the best athletes. It's no different. Your career can be accelerated no end by the right relationships and the right mentors. And I've just felt so lucky, Ben, going all the way back to when I was 22 years old and my boss at the accounting firm to some of the people I worked at with overseas in my last role. And now that I wouldn't be where I am today without them. And, if I was a young advisor, I'd be annoying and chasing the people that are in their shoes that I want to be in.
Yeah.
I can't think of anyone that's ever not wanted to help me if I've asked.
No, beautiful, mate. That's awesome. Well, then I guess that's the shout out to all those young advisors that are potentially looking for a change, mate. Give yourself a call.
Always happy to have it.
Yeah, Paul's got a phone and apparently he doesn't dread anybody calling him. So that's brilliant, mate. Cheers heaps for coming on, mate. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
Cheers.